Thank you for standing by, and welcome to Garz & Colleges HoldCo Annual Results Conference Call. At this time, all participants are in listen-only mode. There will be a presentation followed by a question-and-answer session, at which time, if you wish to ask a question, you will need to press star one on your telephone. I must also advise you this meeting is being recorded today on Thursday, the 28th of April, 2016, and the recording will be available on our investor relation homepage. I would now like to hand the conference over to your speakers today, Colin Storer and James Cornall. Please go ahead, gentlemen.
Thank you, Ella, and welcome, and a very good morning from a surprisingly sunny Leeds. My name's Colin Storer, CFO of the combined Lowell GFKL Group, and I'm really pleased to welcome you to what's our first inaugural annual results call. We've been looking forward to updating you on our progress since the group came together last year. Given this is our first formal opportunity to speak, it would be remiss of us not to say we genuinely appreciate the time you're taking out of your busy diaries to join us. It's certainly been a busy time for us, as you'll no doubt seen from our press releases this morning, that in addition to closing our year-end and producing packs for today's call, that we're delighted to announce that we've reached agreement to purchase Incasso Services, a third-party collection business in Austria. We're going to provide more details of that for you later in today's call. Presenting alongside me is James Cornall, who I'm pleased to say has been recently appointed Group CEO of the Lowell GFKL Group.
Morning, everyone.
James is going to take some time to expand on his recent appointment a little later. For those joining us for the first time, there's a brief introduction to James and I on slide three of our results presentation. For those of you who met us during the Bond Roadshow, I'm sure you can confirm that we really do look as bad as the unfortunate images that you see in front of you. For those of you who've been regular to Lowell's calls in the past and just looking at the attendee list, there's quite a few of you. You'll see that the introductions on slide three are mercifully brief, but hopefully they do allow those of you who are less familiar with our business to understand the collective experience that James and I have got, and actually that's fully indicative of the wider experience which exists across the leadership team. The presentation, should you not have a copy in front of you, is available for download at any time from our newly launched group investor website, which really is a very good website, so I'd encourage you to have a look at it. You can see it at investors.garzonecolleges.com. On slide four, you can see what we'd normally describe as the obligatory housekeeping items. They're housekeeping, but this time I do want to spend a little more time than usual on those points due to the complexity that arises from our first-time consolidation. The presentation captures the trading results of Metis Bidco Limited, which we'll refer to as Lowell throughout this call, and also GFKL Financial Services GmbH, which we'll refer to as GFKL. These results are based on our management accounts. They're on a last 12 months basis, and where appropriate, they're prepared in accordance with IFRS. We say that because clearly cash EBITDA is a non-IFRS measure, as is ERC. Lowell and GFKL became part of the Garz & Colleges HoldCo II SA group, or GH2 for short, at different times during the course of the last year. This means that annual results captured in our presentation are not directly comparable to the audited results of GH2, which obviously captures the results of Lowell and GFKL only post-acquisition. Furthermore, the group has some limited funding and operational costs held in entities that sit above Lowell and GFKL. We've included within an appendix a little more detail than we normally would. We've included some supporting materials to aid your understanding of both the full group structure, but also, and hopefully helpfully, to allow you to reconcile the full-year trading results as captured in the presentation to the consolidated results of GH2, which, as I say, reflects the different abridged acquisition periods. Finally, to further aid comparison to what has to be a pro forma prior year period in the presentation, we've applied a constant currency methodology throughout the presentation so you can make judgment as to the underlying strength of the business year-on-year. With those somewhat extensive formalities now discharged, I'd ask you to turn to slide six, please. Slide six captures our 2015 performance, and I'm again delighted to once again say that FY 2015 has been another successful year of growth for the now combined group, with strong growth reported across our key financial metrics. We've actually invested a quarter of a billion pounds in the last 12 months to the end of December 2015 in non-performing loans across the group, and that represents a 43% increase year-on-year. Our investments, as ever, remain highly diversified across different sectors. This is a source of ongoing competitive strength because it means we've got no singular dependency upon any given sector or indeed any individual client. Our investments continue to be made at attractive money multiples and generate great returns. And furthermore, we enter 2016 buoyed by a 28% year-on-year increase in the number of forward flow agreements that we've got in place across the group, something that provides underlying support for our acquisitions in the current year ahead and indeed beyond. And it's a further sign of how we're embedding and developing our relationships with our clients. Naturally, the year-on-year increase in acquisitions has fed through to our estimated remaining collections, or ERC, which as at the end of the last financial year stood at some £1.4 billion, an increase from the prior year of 24%. And perhaps most strikingly of all is the fact that we expect around 40% of our ERC to come back to us to crystallise as cash within the first 2 years. This means that we've got great visibility of future cash flows, and it also means that our debt purchase business is, of course, supplemented by contribution from our capital-light 3PC or third-party collection businesses in both Germany and the UK. In advance of the obvious question about ERC replenishment rate, in other words, the amount of purchases we need to maintain our December 15 ERC balance, we estimate this to be around £120 million, which, given our forward flow commitments and indeed our present funding structure, is a figure we foresee absolutely no problems whatsoever in delivering over the course of the year ahead. Now, as our balance sheet's grown, equally our group's cash EBITDA number has also increased, and we're seeing a double-digit increase year on year. We recorded cash EBITDA of some £212 million, up from the £196 million that we had in the Bond OM back in June. And that's also an 18% increase year on year. At this point, I'll hand you over to James, who will obviously do a far better job than I ever could talking through some of our more strategic and operational highlights from 2015.
Thanks, Colin. And again, very good morning, everyone. So, here I am, very pleased to be speaking with you on our first ever annual group results call today. Naturally, we'll be focusing a lot on the numbers, but as Group CEO, I wanted to share just a few of the operational, integration and synergistic highlights that have, of course, underpinned what has been, once again, an incredibly busy but equally very successful 2015. So, it's been just over 6 months since the group formally came together, and I'm pleased to say the integration of two of the largest credit receivables management businesses across the largest two European credit markets is progressing incredibly well. The co-CEO structure has, of course, proved fundamental to that successful delivery of the first stage of our integration. But, of course, as we look to the future, we've decided that a singular group CEO structure is best positioned to lead the group through the next phase of our group's development. Furthermore, I'm personally very pleased that we will continue to benefit from Cammy's knowledge, experience, and the market insight that he has, as he is going to remain working with me and the team as a key advisor to the group board and assumes chairman duties for the supervisory board of GFKL. I would also like to take this time to personally thank Cammy for all of his efforts and support and the great cooperation that we've both enjoyed over the past few months. In addition, I'm pleased to announce the appointment of David Gagey as non-executive director, who joins the investor board of Lau GFKL Group, alongside Heinz Hilgart as our non-executive chairman. David has been a senior advisor to the Financial Conduct Authority in the UK and is currently a non-exec director of Shawbrook Bank PLC and Payzone Group. David will also chair our group risk and audit committees. At the same time, I'd like to extend our thanks to Adrian Hill, who has stepped down as our non-executive chairman of LAL. Adrian has served two terms alongside me since his appointment in 2008, and the contribution he has personally made to LAL's development, as well as my own, of course, has been nothing short of exceptional. I'm also pleased to announce the appointment of Anke Bleets and Mark Schoenger as managing directors of the GFKL Financial Services GmbH to help me lead the team in Germany. Moving forward, I'm very proud to have been, of course, appointed Group CEO and look to the future with real optimism, given the relative strengths of the two businesses, how the integration to date has performed, and our future plans that will unlock further value across the group. Together, of course, with the positive reputation that both businesses has with its customers, its clients, and respective regulators. Furthermore, we benefit from the backing of two of the largest and most successful global investment companies, Impamira and Ontario Teachers. So just returning back to slide 7, I'd like to call out some other key developments from 2015 that have helped put in place the foundations for our future success that we're so confident about. As we mentioned within our Q4 trading update, LAL submitted its FCA application in December. And although we expect this to be more a formality, we are aware that the decision to take some will take some time, given the volume of submissions that the FCA will have received. We do, however, note the FCA's approval of recent peer applications and view this as a very positive overall endorsement of the sector. Within GFKL, we have also successfully completed the minority shareholder squeeze-out, and in the UK, our alternative business structure, or ABS as we refer to it internally, LAL Solicitors, went live in the second half of 2015. And I'm pleased to say that performance to date in this area has already exceeded our initial expectations. So we just turn to slide 8. So on slide 8, we've provided some further insight on how we intend to develop our new business and lay out the future and our plans for our future success. Now, I'm not going to touch on all of the points captured, but clearly establishing our group governance framework and our group executive team have been two of the key initial steps that we've been working on in the past few months. The skills present across the executive team, together with the direction that our framework provides, will both play a key role in what we've defined as our value creation plan. It's through this plan that as a group we will further leverage and join up our data analytics capabilities, acquire new clients through enhancing our sales proposition, and ultimately improve our overall competitiveness, strengthen our position across the UK and Germany, and grow both our DP and 3P businesses, and of course, given this morning's announcements, also in Austria and Switzerland. Okay, so if we just move to slide 9. Precision science, one of my favourite topics. So one route to strengthening our position across the group that also sets us apart is our decision science capabilities. Our decision science is the umbrella term that encapsulates our analytical know-hows, our data assets, and our pricing capabilities. Clearly, having the data to hand is one thing, and of course, we do have some data. As an example, we benefit from having 22.1 million NPL accounts under management across the group. But most importantly is having in place the abilities to leverage such data. And I'm very pleased to announce that we recently appointed Dr. Chris Treppel in January 2016 as our Chief Science Officer to head up our global decision science team. Now, Chris joins us from experience within the industry, given his past experience at Encore, and we'll be bringing together within one group function the data, best practices, and the first-class individuals who already work across our analytics and pricing teams. We look forward to a number of initiatives in this area delivering a real benefit to the group in 2016 and beyond. And I know Chris is chomping at the bit to present some of his views and ideas on the call, which we will hopefully have next time.
So okay. If we just go back to thinking a little bit about our performance to date rather than 2016 beyond, and slides 11 to 15 provide you with further insight as to that financial performance. On slide 11, you can see the 43% year-on-year growth in our non-performing loan acquisitions to the sum of $250 million that I called out earlier. What I'm pleased to also say is that over a third of our acquisitions came from forward flow agreements in 2015. The underlying quantum actually increased by $10 million year-on-year, going from $78 million to $88 million, an increase of some 13%. Our forward flows are agreed only with our most highly developed relationships, and they provide real, genuine, mutual benefit. They're long-term strategic deals, and they enhance the predictability of both the sale from a client perspective and also the investment from our own. The vast majority of our forward flows are subject to risk-adjusted pricing. That means we can dynamically flex the price depending upon the characteristics of the portfolios we invest in and make sure that we maintain an adequate level of returns. Although it's also worth stressing that we've got a thorough understanding of what we're buying ahead of us locking down any forward flow agreements. I'm also pleased to say that not only has the quantum of forward flows increased in terms of spend, but so too has both the number of signed forward flow contracts, which increases from 29 to 37 across the group, but also the average duration of the forward flow contract, which is up from 21 months to 24 months, which gives us great visibility in terms of future purchases. Slide 12 shows how the group's recorded a 13% increase in cash income year on year, moving from £349 million to £394 million. And we define cash income as the cash collections from owned assets plus cash commissions that we earn from assets that we service on behalf of the originators. The income contribution from our third-party collection services business has remained broadly flat year on year at around 20%. And the overall increase in cash income has obviously fed through to cash EBITDA, given that we manage our costs very tightly, with an increase of some £32 million to £212 million, and that's an 18% increase. And I'd want to put that 18% increase in cash EBITDA in context, if I may. Firstly, by its very nature, cash EBITDA is a lagged measure. It's a lagged metric, as depending on the timing of our acquisitions through the year, the growth in cash EBITDA will never outstrip the growth in non-performing loan acquisitions. Secondly, as we acquire either new non-performing loan portfolios or indeed onboard new 3PC clients and placement volumes, we're always going to incur a greater proportion of our servicing costs up front than we actually collect as cash. This is because the cost curve is more front-loaded than the income curve. That's not a surprise if you think about the fact that we are servicing non-performing debt. We have to proactively establish contact with our customers to understand their circumstances. We then have to build a rapport and ultimately agree to sustainable long-term payment plans, which are at the very heart of our business. This dynamic should give you as investors confidence that a positive cash EBITDA run rate that we've seen to date since listing the bonds in the middle of last year will continue in 2016. From a balance sheet perspective, slide 13 shows how our 120-month gross ERC has increased 24% to £1.4 billion. On a 180-month basis, our ERC comes in close to £1.6 billion. And as I mentioned earlier, we also forecast a large proportion of our ERC crystallising as cash within the next 2 years, over half a billion pounds or 40% of that 120-month ERC profile. We really like this collection profile. Early cash liquidations gives us great collection visibility, and at the same time, there's still significant value in the tail of our ERC. This is demonstrating the fact that we actually see around £200 million worth of gross cash collections value evident between month 121 out to a month 180, and that's from assets that we already own. Furthermore, our ERC projections have once again proven to be highly accurate, something again we're very proud of, something that we've historically always been able to demonstrate. As a group, we achieved 100.2% of our December 14 collections forecast during the 12 months to December 15 on the assets that we owned going into the start of the year. We've always marginally outperformed our collection estimates, and we expect this trend to continue. Our ERC replenishment rate, as I've said, is around 120 million. And again, context is everything. This is a quantum of acquisitions we are very confident in achieving. Reasons for this are numerous. Firstly, our diversified purchasing capabilities are proven across both of our markets. Secondly, we've further embedded our client relationships with that growing number of forward flows, which again is also across a range of sectors. And thirdly, with the cash that we have on the balance sheet, and in addition to that, the cash flow that we generate from the assets that we've already owned, we are more than comfortable in covering maintenance spend in the medium term without needing to raise additional funds. We're also well positioned to benefit from very attractive market dynamics. In the UK, we're seeing the annual growth rate in consumer credit rising to some 9.3% in February 2016, obviously an attractive dynamic. And then in terms of the OC&C's estimate for the face value of German consumer credit to be outsourced or sold, that's suggesting that there will be market growth of around 4%. Moving on to slide 15, and what we've done here is call out some of our key group leverage metrics, and I'm pleased to say again, we're already showing a degree of deleveraging from the pro forma position included in the bond offering memorandum that was dated back on 14th of October 2015. As at the 31st of December 15, the group net debt, which comprises obviously our bond principal of £106.4 million, our drawn RCF of just £10 million, netted off our cash position of £107 million, stood at £967 million for net debt. This amounts to 69% of our gross ERC, as defined by the notes offering memorandum with Lowell on 120-month tenor and GFKL on 180-month basis, and that represents, in just the short time that the group's been together, an improvement of around 450 bips. Now, this improvement, it's important to note, is despite the measure being one more suited to a pure-play debt purchaser rather than a successful hybrid with third-party collections. Our business benefits from our third-party collection business because it's a capital-light source of earnings, but it's simply not considered when it comes to calculating a measure that compares net debt to ERC. Our net debt to last 12-month cash EBITDA measure has also improved slightly from the pro forma OM position. It stands at 4.6 times, down from 4.7 times. And again, given that lag nature of last 12-month cash EBITDA, we'd further expect this metric to improve. Finally, as at the end of December 15, the group has got good liquidity. We've got £107 million in cash, and we've got the ability to draw around a further £118 million on our revolving credit facility.
Okay, just move on to slide 17, which touch on regulatory highlights. Of course, it would be remiss of us not to reflect on the regulatory aspects of our market, especially given the regulatory censures that we've seen in the US over the recent years. From our perspective, we see those censures in the US as a more general move to a principles-based approach or framework with fair customer outcomes at the heart of this, which positively demonstrates an alignment towards the FCA's approach in the UK. Thus, we do not expect these actions to have any material or meaningful impact on the FCA's outlook towards how it regulates the UK. Equally, in Germany, we are anticipating minimal to no material changes from the regulator. We note that the final version of the EU General Data Protection Regulation has been agreed and published, with an implementation due in 2018. And again, we foresee no issues given our ongoing investments in our infrastructure in order to ensure data security, compliance with the regulations, and ongoing need to continue to protect the reputation of the group. Furthermore, both Anker Bleet's board membership of the BDIU in Germany and Sarah de Toot's board membership of the CSA, or Credit Service Association in the UK, helps keep the group formally aware of the latest market and regulatory developments, which in turn supports our ability to remain as a key influencer at the forefront of the industry practice. So I guess just talking about it in a bit more practical terms, if you have a look on slide 18, I guess at the very heart of our business is our relationship with our customers. And I'm incredibly proud to announce that Lau has extended its exceptional rating from Investors in Customers. And Investors in Customers in the UK is the leading customer experience consultancy. And this extension of this top three-star rating is a fantastic external endorsement of Lau's approach towards its customers. And at the same time, our net promoter score has actually increased to plus 39 from last year at plus 38, which, whilst a one-point jump may not sound like much, but for a financial services company to receive such a positive score, and in addition for a company that never actually originated the original relationship with its customers to score so highly, is again a key testament to the fair and sustainable approach that we hold ourselves to each and every minute of the day. Such an approach creates a virtuous cycle of delivery, in my view. By building a strong relationship with our customers, we are much better positioned to set up fair and sustainable long-term payment plans. And it's these payment plans, together with our low default rates, that give us visibility of, and of course, confidence in the profile and timing of our future collections, or as we call it, ERC. In effect, this continually supports and extends our client relationships and also helps us grow our data asset, which also allows us to further increase our future NPL acquisitions, given our overall competitiveness. So let's look at strategic outlook for the year. So if we can just move to slide 20. And just to draw our presentation to a close, and of course, thank you for staying with us for what has been a slightly longer than usual presentation, I'd like to reflect on the outlook for the group for the remainder of the year. As I mentioned earlier, I look to the future with sincere optimism. The integration of Lau and GFKR is progressing incredibly well. Internally, our focus is, of course, on value creation, best practices that are being shared across the group to drive further efficiencies and competitiveness, our change capabilities that are being leveraged to help build a strong European-based platform that we can expand from, and, as I've mentioned, our decision science function, which will now help us maintain a disciplined approach and with the investments that Chris and his team are going to be doing, help us take our platform to an even greater level of sophistication. From a market perspective, there exists key structural drivers for growth, namely continued growth in the underlying consumer credit space across both UK and Germany, and also I know the same in Austria and Switzerland, together with increasing regulations such as Basel III and IFRS 9, which is likely to increase furthermore financial services clients, particularly propensity to sell or outsource. And we as a group are in a strong space to benefit from both of these aspects. So, as I said, overall the outlook remains very positive, and the announcement of the acquisition of Incasso Service forms a key part of this already, which Colin's just going to touch on now. So, turning to slide 21. As you can see, it's been a long night. So I'm very pleased to announce that our first piece of M&A is a combined group, the acquisition of Incasso Service for an enterprise value consideration of €23 million. This deal is strategically sensible on a number of fronts. Firstly, it adds to the group a third leadership position in what will be our third market, so Incasso Service being the market leader in third-party collections in Austria. In addition, Austria represents a market in a different maturity phase in which we currently operate, and as such offers significant future growth prospects across both 3PC and potentially purchasing NPL portfolios too. Currently, Incasso Service is a 100% 3PC business, which demonstrates strong cash conversion and also offers revenue-led growth synergies as we look to meet our clients' needs across the entire Germanic-speaking regions. The acquisition presents a minimal integration distraction, with the integration assisted by Cami and members of the wider GFKL team, given the strength of relationships already in place across the German, Austrian, and Switzerland region, or GAS region, as I now know it. So we expect the deal to close at the end of May, subject to antitrust approvals. So to conclude, we go into 2016 with much confidence. We've seen a strong period of trading in Q1, and with our enthusiasm for the remainder of the year remains, as I've said, incredibly high. So we'd like to thank you for all listening, and so without further ado, can we now open up the lines for any questions you may have, please, operator.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. As a reminder, if you wish to ask a question, please press star and one on your telephone and wait for your name to be announced. You can cancel your request at any time by pressing the hash key. Once again, it is star and one if you wish to ask a question. And your first question from the line of Alisa Senderovic of Barclays. Please go ahead.
Hi, guys. Alisa from Barclays. Thanks for the presentation. I have a couple of questions. So the first one is on the UK market. Can you provide some color on the pricing environment and if you're seeing any impact on your IRRs? And then secondly, can you talk a little bit more about third-party collections and how is that business performing in the UK and Germany? And what specific trends you're seeing. And then lastly, are you able to discuss about your or provide some more color about your future portfolio purchases? So do you expect to continue to invest at roughly twice the replacement level? Thank you.
All right, so I'll pick up the first two questions. So so the UK market generally, pretty similar to what I've given a steer on in recent announcements too, will always remain very competitive. We've got some very sophisticated market participants. And I think probably the reassuring bit for myself is those are guys that know what they're doing. So there's no erratic, irrational pricing that we're seeing. And you know, clearly we've got some very strong competitive strengths that we believe protects our pricing and our IRRs on the portfolios that we clearly invest in. And clearly we're not intending on changing our pricing discipline ever, in fact. So yeah, still very confident that we can deliver the returns that we've been enjoying over the years and you know, work in a rational, balanced market. On the 3PC side, so again, let me just touch on UK first. So I think as you all know, the UK side of the business was an acquisition that we did back in 2015. It was a strategic acquisition, not just for the third-party collection side of it, but for relationships that it holds with the government, as well as a few other clients, but also for its capabilities in litigation, which has been the key focus in the first phase of that acquisition, which, as you've seen, Laos Solicitors has been, I guess, the byproduct of that, which, as I said, has been performing very well. The overall third-party collections business we've been investing in too over the past few years, and obviously with our added support from the knowledge that the GFKL team has brought over the last 6 months, I'm very pleased to say that that business now is moving forward at a great pace and is also picking up traction in terms of growing its client base. So although at the moment it's relatively small, we're very confident about the future growth on that side of the business too. And then again, in Germany, I guess you can see the figures yourself in terms of the GFKL numbers, which is predominantly led by third-party collections in Germany. Again, all things happening as we would hope and expect from that front, and the business is performing very well.
I think your third question, Anissa, was around purchase guidance. Two things which I draw your attention to. The first is that we've historically been able to grow our purchases by around 20% year on year. Second thing is that clearly with the quantum of forward flows that we've got at around 90 million, that pretty much covers the vast majority of our replenishment rate, which means that any spot purchases that we make are going to be accretive and help us getting towards that two times number that we've historically achieved. We've certainly got the liquidity to allow us to satisfy that ambition.
Great, thank you.
Your next question from the line of Jamie Kane from Mozitis. Please go ahead.
Hi, guys. So my question's on EBITDA margins. GFKL cash EBITDA margins lower, presumably because of the 3PC business. Could you just give us a sense of the difference in margin between 3PC and debt purchasing? And then secondly, following on from that, with the GFKL debt purchasing margins, are they broadly in line with Laos, or is there room to increase them over time?
I'll pick that up. Jamie, I think the way that we look at it is not necessarily in terms of EBITDA margin. We typically look at it in terms of a gross profit margin before looking at back office costs. And the 3PC business in the UK is generating over a 50% margin. The German business generates a slightly higher margin in terms of 3PC above 60%. The two DP businesses, there is a slight differential. There is a greater margin in the UK at around 75% compared to Germany at around 65%. But nonetheless, even on those relative markets, differences, they are still very attractive gross margins which are being achieved. I think the other point which I would call out as you start thinking about margins is I'd direct you to think about cash EBITDA as a percentage of cash income. And then you can see then if you look at our last 12-month year-on-year figures, you're actually seeing the benefits of scale and improving operational efficiency as that margin grows from 52% in the last 12 months to December 14 to 54% in the last 12 months to December 15.
Okay, yeah, no, I do tend to look at it on a cash income basis. And is there propensity to improve those DP margins in Germany from 65 up to the 75 in the UK, or, you know, albeit those being gross margins you were talking about?
Yeah, I think it's hard to obviously talk about specific numbers, but I think give you some directional encouragement. Clearly, one of the main areas of focus that we've been focusing on in the synergies and sharing of best practice is trying to bring a lot of the decision science investments that we've put into the UK over the years and the methodologies into the German business too. And obviously, this is one of the areas Chris and his combined global team now are going to be focusing a lot on. And, you know, with the enhancement and sophistications, a lot of that goes towards improving margins and overall competitiveness. So that should give you some directional steer at least.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks, Jamie.
Once again, ladies and gentlemen, it is star and one if you wish to ask a question. And your next question comes from the line of Olivier Monnier from BNP Paribas. Please go ahead.
Yes, good morning, gentlemen. Thank you for taking my question. I have a couple. My first question would be some sort of discrepancy that I see with this update and the previous trading update as it regards to Garfunkel. At the previous update, the Garfunkel number was for EBITDA and cash income seemed to be $84 million and $198 million, and now with this presentation, I get $61 million for EBITDA and also a lower number for the cash income. Can you clarify that, please?
Obviously, it's difficult for me to see the exact numbers that you're referring to. Our last update was for Q4, and we maybe quoted the numbers in millions, euros, and we're now looking at constant currency as well. So there'll be a number of differences between the two sets of numbers, Olivia. But if you want to forward me the individual details, then I'm sure that I'll be able to reconcile them for you.
So this has to do with the currency. Okay, I get it.
I think so. Without seeing your numbers, it's difficult for me to say, but that would certainly be the presumption.
Okay. One other element you could help me with is the servicing cost for the combined business and how you see that evolving. Do you have the annual servicing cost for the combined business?
So again, it depends upon whether you look at servicing cost, including back office and overhead, or whether you look at it purely in terms of cost to collect ratios. The both ratios have stayed reasonably flat, although we're clearly seeing that improvement, which I referred to in terms of cash income relative to cash EBITDA, which is a sign of our growing scale. I'd certainly like to hope that that momentum continues going forward as we leverage our scale to have a greater extent.
Yeah, again, I think this also goes back to my point earlier where, you know, a lot of the focus around how we improve some of the practices across both parts of the business is to improve efficiencies and things like focusing on how we improve what we call NPV per account by looking at where we should invest costs and where we shouldn't a bit more wisely using data analytics as an example. So this is a good area of where we expect to improve on an apples and apples basis our servicing cost ratios and overall competitiveness.
All right. And lastly, on the acquisition that you just announced today, can you give us some sort of metrics on the profitability of the business you're acquiring?
Yeah, it's a business which generates a couple of million worth of cash EBITDA and adjusted EBITDA. Clearly, there's no difference because we're not applying EIR accounting. However, it's a business that we think has huge synergistic potential, given that a number of our clients in Germany are asking for 3PC services in Austria. So the principal synergistic benefits are going to be revenue-led, although there may be some limited cost saves, but nonetheless, that adjusted EBITDA number, we're very confident we should be able to grow in time.
All right, thank you.
Your next question from the line of Jason Lay from Deutsche Bank. Please go ahead.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my question. The first one is just on the presentation. You had talked about on page 15, you've got the ERC, the sum of 120 months for Lowell and 180 for GFKL. What again was the rationale for summing the ERCs over different terms?
Yeah, astute observation, Jason, and one which we've been asked a couple of times previously during the bond roadshows. It's very simple. There's two very different collection environments between Germany and the UK. So in the UK, it is probably more customer rather than client-focused in terms of regulation, whereas in Germany, some of the customer centricity or the customer compliance requirements are a little less robust. Equally, there is no statute of limitation restrictions in Germany, which means that we're able to continue to collect out on the tail. So there is collections which come in the UK between 120 and 180, but we prefer to keep it on a prudent basis in the UK on 120.
Okay, understood. And then I heard the question but didn't hear the answer. Did you give any split in the DP and DC or debt purchase and debt collection margins between those two businesses?
We did indeed. It was probably a blessed relief to have missed the answer the first time, but allow me to say it again. So in terms of 3PC, we look at gross margin of around 55% in the UK and around 65% in Germany. Hence the logic of bringing the two businesses together to share best practice and to harmonise a higher gross profit margin in the UK, more akin to that achieved in Germany. And then the reverse is obviously true in terms of debt purchase, where the UK is achieving a gross margin of around 75% compared to the German gross margin of around 65%.
I think the other thing to say as well is, you know, we tend to look on a market front, we actually sometimes look at this as a holistic view. So we may actually do third-party collection business at a lower margin to attract a purchase opportunity. So I guess it's also just be careful about some of these trends, because there are some big deals that we have where we've got a one-stop shop offering where it's not so clear where the overall profit is being made between the two products.
Yep, great point, James.
Okay, understood. Thank you.
Once again, ladies and gentlemen, it is star and one if you wish to ask a question. And your next question is on the line of Ash Thomas Watson. Please go ahead.
Hi, guys. Thanks for the presentation. My big question relates to Lisa's question earlier about the pricing environment and returns on IRRs. Appreciate it's still robust, but can you put some numbers around it in terms of money multiples and IRRs, please?
No, I'm afraid.
You can give a little.
I guess we've got to be careful about competitive, revealing competitive dynamics. But I think.
Just to jump on that then. So your competitors say, for example, just to quote Arrow, they say for the last year they've been buying their UK portfolios at roughly a 2x 120-month ERC.
Yeah.
Are you buying higher or lower than that, or in line?
So I think the way which I'd answer it would be, I wouldn't necessarily confuse money multiple with returns. They are two fundamentally different things. The gross money multiple is a gross return, and clearly the returns that we're generating is a net return. So please don't fall into that obvious trap. In terms of your specific question, then clearly under the terms of the indenture, we disclose the current year's gross money multiple, and we're required to do it on an 84-month basis. So in the UK, we've initially forecasting a 1.6 84-month gross money multiple, and in Germany it's a 2.2 times. On a 120-month, I would anticipate that 1.6 to be rising to 2 times in time, so exactly the same as where Arrow is. The 1.6 translates to a 1.8 multiple on 120-month now, but I think the important thing to note are gross money multiples have consistently lifted with time. They've always improved with maturity, and I see no reason to expect anything else going forward. I think the only other point which I'd say is gross money multiples obviously driven by mix. And if you've got a higher proportion of paying and fresher debt, then naturally you'd accept a lower gross money multiple. But because the cost to collect that type of debt is significantly lower, you're not necessarily anticipating a lower marginal return. And that's definitely been the case for ourselves. So in 2015, we purchased around 30%, a little bit higher, of paying debt as a proportion of our total book. That compares going into 2015 with only having around 13% of our book being paying. So that mix point is a really important point for you to consider, as is the the ever-increasing maturity of the gross money multiples improving over time.
Okay, thank you, Colin. Just in response to the maturity point, is the increase over time from the 1.8 times 120-month ERC multiple to the 2 times simply because you're always looking 120 months forward, or are you telling me that from the date you buy the portfolio, you think it will be a 1.8x, and then by the time those 120 months have expired, it will actually have been a 2 times?
Yeah, good way to look at it. It's both. So we're constantly improving upon our collection estimates, and with innovation allows us to collect more than what our original pricing expectation is. And clearly the money multiple is based largely upon the pricing expectation in the year that you acquire it. Having said that, the nature of the calculation lends itself to having a higher money multiple on earlier vintages. So if you think about it, in the year that you actually acquire the debt, you're looking at 120 months worth of expected cash collection. If you're looking at a portfolio which was acquired in 2005, you've got the 120 months from the point of purchase, but you're also now benefiting from the value which is inherent within the tail, which obviously lifts the gross money multiple as well.
Right, so it's basically you're not comparing apples to apples in terms of duration, so you have a slightly different profile. Okay, and then just to come back to your net point, appreciate that definitely. And then can you give us some steer on what your net returns are doing?
No.
I think the main thing to get is that we're buying portfolios at attractive returns consistently, and those are broadly in line with what we've been doing over the past few years.
The attractiveness of those opportunities is flat rather than increasing or decreasing?
Correct.
Okay, thank you.
Your next question from the line of Jonathan Gabo of Shankman Capital. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Good morning. Thanks for doing the call. Two questions. And the first one is, should we expect the proportion of DP business, now you've got your feet well under the desk, understand a lot more about the business in Germany, should we expect you to be doing a greater proportion of DP versus third party as time goes forward? And I suppose same thing on Austria. And the second one is, can you just give us an update, and I think I know what you're going to say, but an update on where you are in terms of what you've discovered inside the German business versus what you expected to on the day you signed?
Yeah, I'll pick that up. Again, we don't have a formulaic way to say this is going to be X percent by X years of DP versus third-party collections. I'm kind of ambivalent on the basis that this is led from what the market requires and what the best solution is for our clients, our customers, and of course, ourselves. So I guess as a one-stop shop, I'm less biased now towards DP versus 3PC. That being said, there are clearly attractions for both. I think the reality is we will be looking to grow our third-party servicing revenue in the UK because we've seen very successfully how successful GFKL has been doing that in Germany, and we've learned quite a lot of good stuff along that journey already, and we've put a lot of investment into that business as well. And we obviously have been focusing on helping the German team from the UK team understand a bit better about how we can improve our overall competitiveness on the DP side, as well as the wider business, in fact. So I think the reality is you're going to see some changing dynamics in both areas. And again, in Austria, you know, the business is solely third-party collection, so I know there exist opportunities in purchasing, and we definitely will be exploring that. Make logical sense to do so. But again, we know that there is, just with the synergies that we've already outlined when we've looked at the business in Austria and Switzerland, that there are some immediate opportunities that we'll be looking at given the extensive relationships that exist within the GFKL business. To your more contentious question, have I uncovered any things that are not what I expected in GFKL? Absolutely not. I still remain incredibly impressed by the team, the business, and the logic as to why we put these businesses together in the first place. I think it's a first-class business with a first-class team, and I'm, as I said earlier, very proud that I will be leading the combined group moving forward.
Thank you. Yes, it was a question that swung both ways in terms of whether you'd find stuff better than you hoped or worse. So don't take it as a criticism.
Yeah, no, that's fine. Yeah.
Once again, ladies and gentlemen, it is star and one if you wish to ask a question. And there appears to be no further questions. Please continue.
Okay, many thanks once again for dialing in. Your ongoing support is hugely appreciated, and we look forward to taking you on the next step in our journey. Many thanks.
Thanks, guys.
With that, we conclude the meeting today. Thank you for participating. You may disconnect.